I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Sarah Meehan Cirque is getting some tremendous notices for her debut collection of short stories, The Dead Husband Project. Her writing has been compared to Barbara Gowdy and Margaret Atwood. I talked to her about a month ago just as the book was published, and we reflected on her writing, the various themes that she touches upon, such as relationships, fear, life itself. We also talk about motherhood and how that's affected her life and her writing. She's working on a new novel now, and we talked about the writing process, and whether it's short stories or a novel. Sarah Meehan Cirque is a writer, producer, and broadcaster. She was the host of the CBC Radio 1 series Script and was a producer on Q, DNTO, and Day 6. Her writing has appeared in the New Quarterly, Prism International, Room, Joyland, Tattle Creek, and in Journey Prize Stories. She's worked in television, too, nominated for Gemini. At SM Cirque is the Twitter handle. This collection is published by Doubleday. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Toronto this past August, Sarah Meehan Cirque. Ms. Cirque, good morning.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So when you write a collection like this, and now you're out promoting it, is it difficult, because you've been on this side of the microphone as well, to know what to talk about in terms of the story, because there are so many stories in the book, I forgot to count. But do you find it curious, say, what interviewers will ask you about in terms
yes.
of which story they pick, say?
I do. I find it difficult to talk about, because I wrote them probably over the course of about 7 years, and I didn't have any real intention of linking them thematically. These are stories that, you know, for lack of a better term, I guess, sort of bubbled to the surface in their own time at different stages of my life. And to try to synthesize all of that in one pretty answer is a little disingenuous, but also kind of hard to do. But I'd like to think I'm getting better at it.
And so as you talk to people across the country about the collection, I guess people focus on the first story because that's the title of the book as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends, but we usually start there.
Yeah. Is there one story that you like? I mean, it's a terrible question to ask, especially for a writer, but I mean, is there one in this collection that you like more than, say, the rest?
I don't think it's a terrible question, and I think I have given that, you know, they started, some of them started many years ago, and they've gone through rewrites, and I sort of have this different relationship with each one, but to be honest, it changes. Sometimes I like other stories more than others, but I keep going back to a couple of them. One is Barbados, which I think is the third story in the collection, about a couple who have a young child who's not yet one, and they're on a holiday in Barbados.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for some potentially devastating medical news. And but that's just sort of the extreme part of all of the issues that they're dealing with. And I think in that story, you know, I honestly don't even remember where it started. Well, it probably started when I was in Barbados.
Yeah.
I'd taken my husband and I were there with our young child, our first child. So I know I had some ideas there, but there was, in going back to that story now, I feel like there are so many layers to that character, that wife in particular, who is addressing things and thinking about things that I do believe a lot of people, especially early on in marriages now, think about but are afraid to talk about. So I think bringing some of that to light is something that I'm proud of.
So you mentioned that story, and what triggered my memory of that story was the other couple that I guess.
Oh, in the story itself, yeah.
Because the story begins with the couple that you've just mentioned, watching this other couple at this resort that they're at, or at the beach that they're at, who every morning get up, haul their stuff out to the beach to save their spot, if you will, and then go back inside and then come back a few hours later. I guess they go back to bed, I guess is what the wife wonders, right? Mm-hmm. And so in thinking of that couple, it made me think of what you do as a writer and just how perceptive one is. And do you think that perceptiveness comes to you at an early age, say, and that adds, I don't know, something to the writing that you do now?
I guess. I mean, I certainly don't feel much different than I did when I was 10 years old in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably true. It's not something I've thought much about. But what's interesting to me, too, about that other couple and about that story on another level is that in so many ways it's about these veneers or these lives that we think other people are living. And that the young wife who's looking out the window at this older couple, first of all, they guess their nationality's wrong.
Mm.
They have this whole perception, they've created this whole idea of who these people are, and they're not at all, but you don't find that out until later on. But I also think on another level, when, you know, say a young couple goes on vacation, for example, you only get their Instagram feed of highly filtered sun flare images of everybody being so happy. But what I found so interesting is the number of people who've told me they've really related to Barbados, almost in this, in this confessional sort of way, that thank God everything isn't perfect,
yeah.
You know, and it's not, and I feel good about saying that everything is not perfect, and I think a lot of the stories touch on that.
And I guess just on a superficial level, when we go places, or even if we're just in the city walking around, and when we see other people, I mean, we do try to fill in the backstory. There's another story in the book where someone does that, right? Just try to fill in the backstory about someone else. Like you're wondering what the deal is of this other person that you've just encountered, say.
Right. Right.
And
yeah,
you wonder about their past and where they came from, what they were doing before you ran into them, even.
For sure. For sure. I think we just do that naturally. I mean, I think we're all, when I think about why am I doing this? Why am I even writing? I realize how we just all make our own stories all the time. That's sort of just, we have this running narrative in our heads whenever we encounter anyone, like you just said. And I do like playing with that. I do like playing with that idea. And it does come up a number of times in the book where characters are creating their own realities for other people that end up crumbling, sometimes in terrible ways.
Yeah, and I guess it's just fun to well, it's also bad to do, you know, to read a book by its cover sometimes, because you do get it wrong, right, from time to time.
Yes, you do. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time, and people want to put up what they want you to see. And I think that's, if there's anything that I feel really pulls the stories together in terms of the theme, it's this yearning for connection. And I think just about every story has that that sense to it, that theme to it. And this wasn't totally conscious, but I think right now, when we live in this era where we're with social media and the way that we connect to each other, quote unquote, connect to each
yeah.
other, I think we put, not only do we have that first layer that we like to put out to the world when you're just meeting someone on the street, but now you have these additional layers of, oh, I'm going to tweet this because then that's going to say this about me and my personality. I mean, I've caught myself doing that.
Yeah.
I've caught myself almost taking a picture of this cool new restaurant and I'm going to tweet about it. But why? Because I'm trying to be cool? I stopped myself because I could feel it happening. I'm terrible at Twitter, by the way, so I'm not going to cast judgment on some
yeah.
people are very good at it. But you know, the same thing with Instagram and the versions of ourselves that we put out there. So in a way, we're connecting with people, but in a way, I feel like that adds layers of loneliness because you're not, that isn't you. That isn't all of you. That isn't probably the the you that you really wish people would see. And I think that social media comes up actually pretty naturally. I wasn't there. It's in the story or in different stories, and I didn't think about it this way. But it is just the way we communicate in so many of our relationships. But I do think that it does add another layer and more questions about the ways that we connect and how effective that is, and how maybe in some ways paradoxically isolating it can be too.
So if we need connection, and we're trying to connect, because I mean, if I think of the person that Instagrams or tweets everything, that they feel they need to do this. I mean, we really don't know the kinds of connections we need, right?
Yeah, and I think some of that is kind of, as I said, I'm not very good at it. So when I have done it, sometimes it feels a little bit like screaming into the void.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like sending something out there to see what kind of response you're going to get. And it is, I'm not saying it's not a connection, but I think it's at a different level. And the more we rely on that as our primary form of connecting to each other, I wonder what happens to us. And that makes me sound like a really old person, and I'm not that old.
Yeah, no, but I think we mistake the sort of connections we make on social media as connections themselves that are useful, because we have seen how destructive they can be.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But I think in the most basic ways, which is sort of what I'm most curious about, and I think that a lot of the stories touch on, are, you know, how are we connecting to each other, and what happens in the absence of that connection? And I think a lot of the stories or a lot of the characters are in moments of crisis, because of a lack of connection, and trying to determine, you know, what role they had in getting to the place they're in, and trying to figure out how to reconnect with the people around them, or if that's even what they want at all.
Now, what comes first for you as you write, the character or the crisis?
I think it depends on the story, and to be, you know, totally honest, I don't think there certainly isn't or hasn't been, in my experience so far, a great deal of intentionality, of conscious intentionality when I approach these stories. They usually start as some kind of internal disturbance, quite honestly. I feel like I need to write, and then I will start with a character, or I'll start with a situation. And then a lot of times, or sometimes anyway, that character situation may not even be in the final version of the story, but when I have sort of settled that disturbance, so to speak, and I go back and look at what I've written, then I start peeling back to see what is it that I'm trying to say, what is it that I felt that I was trying to communicate, because I am much more of an intuitive person than I am, you know, I don't, what's the opposite of intuitive? Logical?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
I am
calculating.
More of an intuitive person.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel something much more than I can express it at first. And that's part of the reason why it's been a little bit challenging talking about the story too, because I know when they're finished. I feel when they're finished. I know that the things that I'm trying to say are all mostly under the surface of the actual words. I can feel that. So trying to say, well, this is what I meant to do, is not true. But in going back and reading them, I can start to pull together, yeah, this is what this is about. And I shouldn't say that's just at the end. I mean, that's in the rewrites, in the editing process, for sure.
Do you, this is I would think a silly, because I don't write. I would think for a writer it's a silly question, but I'm sure you're going to get this as you talk about this book, how much of yourself is in some of these characters, in some of these situations that they get themselves into in your collection?
I think a lot of myself is in there. I think maybe not the situations, not the things that they've necessarily done or are having had happen to them. But you know, I remember a piece of writing advice I'd heard or read a very long time ago about writing about the things that you're afraid to talk about or admit to. And that was kind of a scary thing to think about and to start mining. But that's ultimately, I think, where a lot of things come from doubts and loneliness and big questions that I don't feel that way all the time, but I think we all do at some point. And that seems to drive, I don't really need to be writing when I'm feeling great and happy. I don't have the same push.
Yeah.
But when I guess it's sort of like being in an existential moment of crisis, of, and not even deep crisis, but just why when everything is so great do I feel lonely? Why, you know, on paper everything is perfect, so what is wrong? And I think a lot of these characters deal with that.
So when you write, does whatever crisis you're going through, big or small, does that say dissipate? Does that make it easier to get through?
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess, I mean, and believe me, in the scale of the world, my crises are minimal that I've dealt with. But I don't think, I certainly, if I'm feeling really acutely about something, that is also not a time for me to be writing. I can't.
Yeah.
But when it's more of a dull ache of existence and trying to navigate the steps that, you know, we've taken or, you know, I've taken so far. And I think that's why I say it's a lot of stories or a lot of moments of writing begin with just feeling uncomfortable, of feeling like there's something that has to be untangled. And then in the best case scenario, that feeling is relieved, and then I've got something of a story, and then I can go back and ideally maintain that set of emotions, but construct something that has a narrative arc to it at the same time, you know, not completely redoing it, but just slowly uncovering what it is I'm trying to say, I guess.
And so I've talked to writers for years now, and sometimes when they feel that they need to write to get out of whatever crisis they're in or to help them understand whatever's happened to them. Do you look at this collection with an idea that there is some wisdom here for the reader, if not yourself? I mean, did you learn something after writing the stories in this book that you didn't know before, about yourself even?
I'd have to probably think about that more. I'm sure I have. I mean, on a very superficial level, I've learned about perseverance and tenacity because
I'll bet, yeah.
Writing this right when I was working full time at a not a lighthearted job,
yeah,
with two young kids, there were a lot of things, a lot of pulls in different directions. But it was not just perseverance; it was the feeling that that's where I feel most myself and most at home. I don't know if there's some overarching anything that, you know, I guess what I feel like I have learned is in some of the dialogues that I've had since with people in, you know, the early stages of this having just come out, and the things that people are connecting to, the themes that people are connecting to, the way that people are talking to me, and it's intimate and it's quiet, and I think I use the term confessional, because they're really relating to some of these deep doubts, maybe uncertainties, bigger questions about themselves and a place in their lives, and it makes me feel better. Because I feel like I've expressed things that are difficult, and people have connected to them, and I think overall it makes people feel a little bit less lonely. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that seems to be sort of the intimate connections and relations that I've had with people who have read the story so far anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if you read the reviews, but one reviewer said that this book made them realize that just how much we try to find enough in every moment in order to keep moving forward. And, you know, I thought that was incredibly wise, not only of the reviewer, but, of the book itself, the collection itself, because I think a lot of the people that you write about in the book who do go through these crises realize that at the end of the day. Or if they don't realize that, we as the reader realize that in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do remember that review, and that did strike me as well, because I remember coming to the end of a few different stories and realizing that was all you have. You have to make sure, you have to find enough to move forward out of a crappy situation, because you're going to propel yourself 9 times out of 10. So what are you going to use to get there? And I do think, and the older you get, you realize that things aren't perfect. It's usually that there's just enough. There's just enough of something good to keep you going. And no, I think you're right. I think that comes out in a lot of the stories.
So how are you then with advice? I mean, I'm sure people ask you for advice as a mom, as a writer, as a broadcaster. I'm sure you give advice to people from time to time, but how are you in terms of taking advice from others?
Oh, I think I'm much better at taking it than giving it.
Really?
I still
feel,
especially when it comes to the writing side of things, I still feel very brand new. You know, the experience of having the book come out has been a bit disembodying, because as you hear over and over, writing is such an isolating internal experience, and then to become public with it is a little bit disorienting, not necessarily in a bad way, but still it kind of flips everything on its head. I love helping people write, but I'm not sure, you know, I haven't had the opportunity yet to be extolling much advice. I do hope I will at the time, but I will at some point, but it took a while to take advice.
Yeah.
You know, I took a lot of different workshops, and at the beginning, I remember thinking, oh, I'm amazing. And I was not. I was not at all. And this is years and years ago, and, you know, I would think, oh, just wait until the teacher hears what my piece is. And I remember one teacher in particular sitting back and saying, well, everyone, you know, and here I am thinking that she's going to get up and call the Gillers, you know, just to right away. And I was not anywhere near. Oh, it's just awful, some of the stuff. But it took a while to get rid of that ego, and certainly not gone altogether, but to push that aside enough. And it's still hard. It's still hard to hear people say, you know what, I don't think this is quite working, or I think that's a little bit melodramatic, or I don't feel something for this character. That's not necessarily an easy thing to hear. But ultimately, and I have some wonderful people around me, not only my editor, but writing groups that I've worked with, who are very good at giving hard advice, and my writing has ultimately benefited from it. Stories in that book have benefited from it, and so I know that it's a good thing in the end. I'm learning.
So on the flip side, because you, this, the book has gotten some good notices already, what do you make of the I mean, you're compared to Atwood and Barbara Gowdy. I mean, does this approbation, does this confer a bit of pressure as you continue to write?
I think that stuff is still a bit surreal, to be honest with you. I'm working on my next book now, which is a departure because it's a novel. So I feel like I'm in a different headspace than I have been up till this point. And I'm trying to not let that, you know, I've got a million neuroses. I'm sure they'll just join the party when I'm able to sit down again. No, I mean, at this point, that's just, it means so much to me, and I feel incredibly grateful that those names have even been uttered anywhere near my work.
What, when you, because you just mentioned you're writing a novel now, what is it like to get into that process? Because, I mean, these are short stories, and so one the untrained eye, if you will, would think that a novel is just one of these stories longer. I mean, it's not, is it?
No. No, and I didn't ever start writing short stories, you know, as practice to become a novelist. It's a form that fit with my life and what I was doing, and I honestly didn't give it much thought, and that's the form that I have practiced for years, and I feel very comfortable in it. The novel is very different. The good thing about the novel, though, is that it can be anything. It doesn't really stick to a particular, there are no rules for writing a novel. What I'm trying to do to make it more digestible is to break it into parts, so I can approach each part as kind of a short story and pull them together. Whether that will be effective or not, we'll see, but that's how I have to do it, given that this isn't my normal, you know, my way of approaching things. And I heard George Saunders talking about writing Lincoln and the Bardo, which I'm nearly sure is his very first novel after all his short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And he likened it to something like having, you're juggling and you just have a lot more pins in the air with a novel. And with a short story, you know, you have three or four in the air and you can see them all clearly. But with a novel, when you have like 50 in the air and you're thinking, okay, how does this one connect to this one? And, oh, don't let that one drop. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing him badly, but that made a lot of sense to me. That's sort of been my experience so far.
Some of the stories in the book were written before you had kids, and some others. When you read them again, can you tell, and in terms of what you can tell, has parenthood changed your perspective on things, say?
Oh, it for sure has. And actually, one of the interviews that I did really focused a lot on motherhood, and the interviewer had seen motherhood as a primary theme in the book, which I hadn't thought about, but when I look back at it, I can see that it's there quite a bit. There are stories that I probably wouldn't have written or wouldn't have gone in the direction that they did go in if I'd had children. And that's not to say that I won't write that again, but my kids are so small and I'm in such a vulnerable place with them that going into some dark places that involve kids is a difficult thing for me. But at the same time, I think all of these stories have in one way or another been touched or altered in the years since I've had kids. So although maybe the initial approach might be a bit different, you know, they've all had the hand of a mother on them. But I do think one of the quotes in the first story is a young artist says to, or was talking to a crowd, and she's, you know, revered and very prolific, and somebody asks her what's the best piece of advice she'd ever been given, and she laughs and says, let other people have babies. And it's a piece of advice that I had heard given to writers, and I was, I'd either had my first child or was pregnant when I did, and it just made me wither, not in anger, but in, God, please tell me this is not true. And I know it's not true logically, but I understand where it comes from. But I wanted the main character, who is an artist also in that story and who has a child, to be face to face with that idea, because that's part of her overall crisis. And how much did that potentially interrupt her ability to become a better artist? But I do think your life completely changes. Anybody will tell you, right? It's the time that you had. Like, I don't even know how many times I say, what did I do in my 20s? Honestly, like, what did I do?
Yeah.
And now I have an hour or two here and there, and I can get so much done in that time. But I also have, the world shifted. It shifted on its axis when I had kids. I have a different perspective. I relate to parents now. I understand why people say losing your child is the worst nightmare. I mean, I feel all kinds of different things, and in some ways, being a mother definitely, or being a parent in general, but for me, being a mother makes it much more difficult to do my work in terms of the pulls in different directions. But in other ways, I think it's a whole, it's like I was given a whole other box of colors to put into my toolkit. And I have this whole array of experiences and emotions and, you know, and all that way of living and being that is part of what I write now. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's an important thing to have in our cultural discourse.
And I guess your perspective on time changes, doesn't it? I mean, you just mentioned, you know, what you did in your 20s. You realize that there isn't enough time in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And
don't even have time to realize that you don't have enough.
There you go.
When they're so small.
Yeah. So then, what is it then to have that part of your life and then this part of your life as a writer?
Well, it's all relatively new to me because I was writing at night. I was writing, you know, when I had some time. But since I got a book deal a year and a half ago or so, I've shifted everything to make it my job. So I have, you know, I have the caregivers that I need, and I may not have a room of one's own, but I've got a great library. It's not in my house. I mean, down the street where I work. It's not easy. I would love to sometimes wake up and make a cup of coffee and drift to my desk and start going. I mean, that's a dream scenario, but it's also great to wake up with my kids and get them going and then go and spend a few hours. Takes a little bit of time to disconnect from the spinning tops in my brain. That is, you know, motherhood of young kids. But then I get going and I'm doing my work and my job that I love, and then I come back. So yeah, it is. It's not an all day long sitting there drifting. Let me go and think about things. I have a very specific period of time, and sometimes you're really tired, and sometimes it's harder than other days, but. You know, that's okay. That's just how it goes. That's how we function. And overall, I do think I'm in a better place for me as a writer to be able to include those experiences in my work.
So you always wanted to be a writer? I mean, even when you were a kid, was this something that you wanted to do?
I think so. I wanted to be an actor for a long time. And I did that, and I didn't major in it or anything, but I acted. I was in theater for much of my life through university. But it didn't feel that different. It felt quite closely connected. And I was always writing, and I kind of took it for granted. And then it got to a point where when I was applying for school, for university, I was going into a science program with these bold expectations that I would become a neurologist, but I didn't want to be I wanted to be Oliver Sacks. I wanted to be a neurologist that wrote.
Yeah.
And so that was always there. And fiction seemed, I don't know, I guess I didn't believe I could do it for a long time. And then the pull became stronger and stronger, and then I was doing it as a hobby, and then I was doing it more seriously, and the better, you know, the more positive feedback I was getting, the more I started to think, maybe this is something I could actually try, and then I just became a stubborn goat and said, I am going to do this.
Yeah. So, I guess, is that the best advice then for someone that wants to write, that they just do it?
Yes. Yes, and it sounds so easy, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I luckily, my husband is a real doer, which isn't to say he's not a dreamer in some ways, but he's probably the most, you know, the serious doer of anybody I've ever met. And, you know, I would talk a lot and all the time about writing. I wanted to be a writer. I should be a writer. And he was the one that, in not so many words, said, shut up, sit down, and write. Just do it. Stop talking about it. Do it. And I realized, oh, yeah, that's the only way you get anything done. So, yeah, it is. It's true. It's perseverance. I was not the best in my writing classes when I started. But I just kept going. And there was something... If you feel like you have to do it, and I certainly do, I certainly feel like I have to do it, then it's been worth the tears.
Finally, Sarah, what's it like to be on this side of the interview?
Weird. This interview is good. I don't know. I still am kind of trying to get my head around why anybody would want to ask me all kinds of questions. You know, I appreciate it, but I'm getting used to that idea, I guess.
Yeah, I've always wondered when because I've interviewed interviewers in the past, and I mean, I enjoy. I must say, I really enjoy being on this side of the conversation because I can ask whatever I want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
I just marvel at guests who can talk off the top of their head on anything, and which is probably why I don't do interviews.
And I had to really prepare. I mean, I found what I have enjoyed about being interviewed is that it's made me think more about what I've written and why it's come out the way that it has, and has synthesized for me, or made me synthesize some of the overall ideas and themes and curiosities that I had in the approach to these stories, and have had to put them into words. So I think that's really what I get out of it, and what I've appreciated, and being able to talk to people like you.
Does that change then as you go on, as you write? I mean, do you have that perspective, say a clearer perspective as you write?
Because as
you prepared for interviews, you've been thinking about what you've written.
I know what you're saying, and I think in some ways I haven't, because since I've been doing some press for this book, I haven't had much of a chance to go back to my the book I'm working on now. But I do think that, well, first, like I said, it's a novel, so my approach is different and my intention is a little bit different. But I do think it does. But at the same time, I don't want it to too much, because I think, for me personally, a lot of the strength in my work comes from not knowing exactly where I want to be headed and not being too clear thinking about it until I'm in a later process with it. I want it to be raw and coming from somewhere deep that doesn't necessarily have, where words don't come so easily. And then I want to be very clear-headed when I'm sorting through that mess. But for now, I want the raw stuff to still be there.
This has been such fun talking to you, and as I told you before we started, I enjoyed this book, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much, Joe. I really enjoyed speaking with you, too.
The book is called The Dead Husband Project. It's published by Anchor Canada. It's author Sarah Meehan-Sirk. Join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.